Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Bar Chords, a podcast by guitar nerds. I am your host, Joe Branton. That's right, this is a new podcast with just me. Think of it as a supplementary podcast to your weekly guitar nerds listening, but without the rest of those nerds, without Mark, Matt, and Jay, the other one, yes. You get just me, which means you get a packed half hour full of guitar talk in actuality. Now, as we're going to be doing with some of these series, the first half of this podcast, as in the first couple of episodes of this series, are going to be available for free. So you can listen to them as you are now on whatever your normal podcast provider is. But the latter half of this series will be available on our Patreon. Patreon.com/guitar nerds, where you can support guitar nerds for as little as $1 a month. Although I think this is going to be available on the $5 tier and up. So what can you expect from Bar Chords? Well, you know, if you're on your commute, then that's fine. If you're sitting at home, then pour yourself a tall glass of gin and you know, we're going to embark on a journey of guitars mostly. That is kind of the idea. So we're going to be talking about what I've been looking at in the guitar world, because I spend all my time these days researching guitar stuff, or looking at guitar stuff, or reading articles, or accidentally getting obsessed with a particular guitar and then buying several of them only to realize that I'm not really that into them and having to have the effort of selling them again. And I only get to talk about that for, like 25 minutes, I guess, if it was an even split on the actual Guitar Nerds podcast between the four of us. So here I'm going to be able to talk about it a little bit more each week. So this week I was doing some research, because I was trying to put together a new video for YouTube on the history of the Les Paul, which I thought was really interesting. Now, listeners, if you're familiar with the origins of the original Guitar Nerds podcast, we started off life as the GAK Guitar Shop podcast, when the four of us all worked in a guitar shop, and I was very much the fourth wheel of the four guys. They'd known each other a lot longer than I had. I was relatively new. I essentially was brought on. Really, I have no idea why. I think they accidentally asked me, because, of course, at the time, Matt Knight was my boss. Jay was the sort of the assistant manager, but you know, it was very how do you say Jobsworth without meaning it meanly? Jay was very dedicated to his job role. So, and of course, listener, as you'll know, I'm an especially lazy, functioning alcoholic. So I don't think I was anyone's favorite person at this point in time. I have no idea why Mark asked me to join. I guess he felt he needed a fourth person and wanted someone who was there for bass related queries, which was of course what I was brought onto the podcast for. And at that point in time, my knowledge was really was almost exclusively bass guitar related, because I'd never been a guitar player. I was a bass player from the get-go. So everything I was into, everything I knew and loved, was very much the bass world. The guitar stuff was very, very foreign to me, especially at that point in time. And it's only over the last sort of six-ish years of doing this podcast and being constantly surrounded by those fellas, and obviously working for a guitar shop, that it's increased my knowledge. But it means that there are weird holes in my knowledge. I might be able to tell you everything about sort of the history of Gaiatone, but I, for example, had no idea about the details of the history of Les Paul. So it was really interesting for me to kind of research into that and to learn about it all. For example, I had no idea. I don't know if you knew this, listener. You know, let me know on the Facebook group, if you do, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Or if you're a Patreon member, you know, feel free to message on the Patreon group. But I had no idea that the original, the 52 Les Paul, had its trapeze bridge put on the wrong way round. It's the first incarnation of the model. Did you know that? The bridge was, so the strings went underneath the bridge piece, not over it, which of course made it impossible to palm mute, which is really interesting. And that was, if you believe what Les Paul says, and there is a lot of discrepancy between Gibson themselves, what they say happened, well, employees who were there at the time, how they say it worked, and how Les Paul says it worked in terms of who had influence over the design. Les Paul says he signed off everything, and then, you know, when he saw the bridge, he told them, you know, that's wrong, whereas they say that he didn't have that much to do with it. But of course, you know, they did in fact get the bridge very wrong, and Les says that he told them at the design stage that bridge was really useless. And of course, you know, if I think it looks awesome, it looks really gorgeous, but yeah, not being able to palm you, I mean, I don't know how much you know, I don't know what genres required palm you. I guess country requires a sort of palm mutey thing going on back then. You certainly couldn't get away with any post hardcore on an original 52 Les Paul. But of course, the fix for this, which I thought was the most interesting, it wasn't just, they didn't just go, okay, let's pop a different bridge on it. They had to change the angle of the neck where it joins the body because of the nature of the bridge, which is madness. That's like a complete, that's such a big thing. You've got to think back in 1952. I know this was super early doors. These were the first electric guitars. And I guess quality control wasn't, you know, then what it is today. I mean, I don't know if Gibson quality control has ever been that great, but I just thought it was really interesting that this instrument made it out into the world in production in a state where it really couldn't be played especially well. So it's interesting that they obviously didn't recall them because they weren't making very many of them, but they, before 1952 was over, they were already changing the bridge round. And of course, even then, they still had issues. There were still problems with the bridge, in as far as intonation is concerned. You think it's interesting that those are the things that have sort of stuck. You know, I think people have such a problem with the headstock angle of a Gibson, or, you know, the way that the strings fan out on that headstock, in terms of, like, you know, scientifically, this isn't good for tuning stability or intonation. I always thought that was funny because I've always had I think I've very much always been of the mind, you know, that's, I love the expression, close enough for rock and roll. I think that's a great expression. And I've always thought that about music, and I'm very, very against, and I'll try not to, you know, go too much into Branton Ranton style podcast territory. But I've always been very much against this clinical approach to guitars, the sort of, you know, the Ibanez. Strandberg, for me, are the ultimate most awful guitar company. Like, not that they're, I mean, they're fantastic guitars. It's just, I hate that it's such a scientific approach to the instrument. I think it takes all the fun out of it. And all of those sorts of players, all those tappy kind of players, people like Pliny, it's like, you're not trying to make guitar music. You're trying to make your guitar sound robotic. You're trying to make it sound MIDI. You're trying to make it sound like a robot's playing this and not a person. I just, you know, I love the out of tune bits. I love the wrong notes. You know, it was always, rock and roll is built on playing the wrong notes at the wrong time. I think that's what makes guitars cool, is that they're so imprecise. And I think, I like that Gibson have kept some of those things, but don't you think it's weird, you know, that they didn't change the headstock, but they did change the bridge in this, obviously the early steps towards trying to create something that intonated properly and that played properly. I thought that was kind of cool. But yeah, you know, I was researching into Les Paul, and of course I was aware of how it moved from, you know, 1952 with the initial P90s onto kind of the 53-54 where we saw the introduction of the what did we see the introduction of? There were two new models in 54, weren't there? It was the Junior and the Custom, which was really cool. Because I tell you, another thing that passed me by that I wasn't aware of was the, what's his name? Thingy Lover. I can't remember. Seth Lover? I'm going to go with that. I'm going to say that. His single coil that he had designed in the neck. I didn't realize that was a single coil. I never realized there'd been an oversized single coil pickup put on a Les Paul, and I thought that was really interesting, like a high output single coil before the invention of the humbucker. But I thought that was a weird thing to go on the Custom. And I was like, man, why did they ever change that? It looks awesome. If you see those single coils on the neck with the sort of the like little square block pole pieces, I thought that was really cool. I thought that was much better than humbuckers. But you know, that's fine. But yeah, I found it really interesting all in all to research the Les Paul. Now, I put it out in like a YouTube video of sort of the history of the Les Paul in 5 minutes, and obviously I wasn't able to cover everything in the detail that I wanted to. Do you know? Also, really annoyingly, I realized 3 days before I put the history of the Les Paul in 5 minutes out, this other great YouTube channel called 5 Watt World had done the history of the Les Paul. But they do, I think their video is 40 minutes long, or maybe it was 20 minutes. So it was long. It was blooming long. Anyway, way too long for me to want to sort of, you know, film and edit something together. But I was like, well, I really hope that my facts are the same as theirs. But, you know, I mean, what did I do? I bought an ebook, you know, and read about the history of the Les Paul. That was that was my research. I think 5 Watt World seemed like some cool dudes who have been involved in music for a long, long time and probably have some great old stories. So, yes, this is the section of bar chords. I think bar chords is a good name. It was like bar room, bar talk. I didn't like any of those. It all sounded a bit rubbish. I was going to call this gear acquisition syndrome, but I want to save that name for something else. Gear acquisition syndrome, a podcast by guitar nerds. I kind of wanted to save that for something that I was going to do with Mark, but, you know, I've got to get Mark. To do something else extra with me in order to do that. But anyway, this is the section of bar chords where we're going to talk about guitars that I want to buy, because listener, if you're familiar with the Guitar Nerds podcast, then you will know that I am absolutely completely obsessed with buying new gear. I'm sitting here in my office. I have a really nice office. So, you know, listener, if you're familiar, I assume everyone listening to this listens to the Guitar Nerds podcast. If you are new and this is your first thing out, well, I think this is already much more informative than the actual Guitar Nerds podcast. So, welcome to Bar Chords with me, Joe Branton. But anyway, As you will know, listener, I recently moved out of Brighton, UK. I'm still in the UK, obviously, but I moved out of the town of Brighton, which is where the four guitar nerds met. And I moved to a little village called Angmering, that's just a sort of 30-minute train ride out of Brighton. So it's not too much trouble for me to get back in and hang out with my mates. I mean, it's actually surprisingly expensive to get the train to do that. And because I spent all my time in my youth buying guitars and doing other substances, I never actually learnt to drive, so I am unfortunately train bound. I really should learn to drive. I turned 35 last week. I don't think we spoke about that on the main podcast, but yes, I turned 35 last week, and you know, I'm very lucky to have an incredibly cool and wonderful girlfriend who drives me around. But I really should learn to drive. Anyway, my point of this was I moved out to the Angmering village, and I was able to rent, because of course my generation only rent. We can't buy anything. Buying is not a thing that will ever be available to us in the south of the country, especially if you're, you know, yeah, you know, not from a moneyed family. But anyway, so we were able to get this 3-bedroom house, which Emma works from home. Emma, my girlfriend, works from home as well. She has a big, important job that makes lots of money, hence why I'm able to do this. But yeah, so we were able to get an office each, which was rather nice, sort of across the hallway from each other. Which is actually great, because it means that I actually focus on work all day, because I can't just come out and dick around, because she'll be like, what are you doing? Why aren't you working your space? She doesn't talk like that, but you know, you get the idea. Anyway, so I'm in my office and I'm surrounded by, I guess I'm kind, I have a big rack of guitars, a cupboard full of guitars, and then a few A-frames out with instruments on them. All basses and guitars, and I feel like I've sold a lot. Maybe since I've started doing this full time, which means I make absolutely sod all money. I've had to sell a lot of guitars in order to keep up with you know, payments for band tours and recording and birthdays and things like that. But let's see. So surrounding me right now, I have a Fender American Original Stratocaster in Candy Apple Red, which is a thoroughly fantastic instrument. Now, this guitar comes in a gorgeous, like, black leather hard case with a lovely sort of plush red interior, and it comes with the little bridge cover on the strap, which I think is great. I don't ever use whammy bars anyway. You know, being a bass player first means that it was something that was just never, I never learnt it as an idea, so as a functional thing to do, so I certainly can't apply it to my guitar playing. But yes, so I got this American Original Strat, and my goodness, with the bridge cover on it, I tell you what, I'm a sucker for those Fender bridge covers anyway. A real sucker for them. I blooming love them. I put them on my jazz bass, I put them on my precision bass. I was on a tour once with my jazz bass with those covers on, but you'd be surprised how they seem to make everything feed back a bit more. I don't know if that's just imagined by me or not, but I really struggled with them. I mean, fine if you're playing blues or jazz or something, but when I was trying to stick, you know, a ton of drive through them, you know, through a great big sort of stack of, you know, 2/215 cabs, it was a bit much. But anyway, I really love the look of them. And oh, a Strat with the little chrome cover on the bridge looks fantastic. Problem is, I actually palm mute an awful lot when I play. And of course, it takes away the ability to do that. So it's something that I had to get used to the fact of taking off. But the American Original series as a whole, I think, is absolutely fantastic.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I think if you're thinking about getting a cool old Fender at the moment, then the American Original Series is a wonderful option. Because, okay, so as you'll know from the main podcast, I recently bought a pair of old Music Masters. I bought a Squier Vista Series Music Master, and I bought a Fender 1977 Music Master, both basses. Of course, recently I've bought a 1969 Precision Bass, and I've had trouble with all of them trying to use them in a live setting. And the thing is, I love the sound of the 77 Music Master, just like I think the 69 P bass I have is the best sounding thing I've ever heard. But they're really unreliable. And that seems to be the thing with old gear. I think if you just sit at home and play in your bedroom, or maybe you play a few blues nights, then get one, because they sound amazing. If playability is something that concerns you, do not get one, because they're not a patch on the new Fenders. And that's what kind of leads me to the American Original Series. Being someone who's owned kind of both ends of the spectrum, and considering what I think of the Fender Custom Shop, I actually really like Relics. Okay, there are a lot of people out there that don't like Relics, but here's the thing. If you think about getting a Custom Shop, you don't have to get it Relics. You could get, I actually think, Classic Classic or NOS, New Old Stock or whatever it is. The slight lacquer checking is lovely. I'd never want it to be Relics, but a little bit of lacquer checking is very nice. And I think the Custom Shop is wonderful. The problem I think the Custom Shop has is the American Original Series is really, really good. And of course, you're getting a Nitro finish. They're the only Fenders that aren't Custom Shop that are finished in Nitro. And I've got a real problem with Poly. I think it's because I like playing shows with guitars and I like throwing them around. And when you dink a Poly guitar, sort of a chunk comes out of it or it cracks. And it doesn't look very good. It looks rubbish. Whereas if you play a Nitro guitar regularly, then you get wear around the places that you play most. And I'm like, man, that's so cool. That's so cool when a guitar kind of becomes part of you so much that it's starting to pick up wear in places where you play. I think that's wicked. But yeah, so the American Original is the only series where you can get a Nitro finish. And I think that's really cool. I think it's a real shame that Fender don't offer it elsewhere. I understand from an environmental standpoint, I shouldn't be supporting Nitro guitars. And I guess that is something that I'm sure we'll move away from completely over the next few years. I wish then, because Poly and Nitro can't be the only type of paints in the world. There must be another method of painting that isn't toxic, but that doesn't mean you're putting a plastic wrap on your guitar like you are with a poly-finished guitar. That would be great. But yeah, American Original is really, really good. The Tellies were fantastic that I played. They do a really good Jazzmaster in the range, and I think the Strat is great. I went through a stage of being a Strat guy, I think, because I'd been so anti-Strat for so long. I sort of suddenly was like, oh, I really like all these I like the sound of a Strat. I like how snappy it is. I kind of like that Simon Neil from Biffy Clyro has such a like really, really aggressive, sharp tone. And like I was like, well, I bloomin' love Jimi Hendrix. I bloomin' love Pink Floyd. Why shouldn't I be checking out a... Why shouldn't I be playing a Strat? Because the weird thing is, I realised that all the other bands that I know, that I'm friends with, who are also influenced by people like, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, bands like that, I was like, none of them play Strats. They all play Tellies. And whenever I asked them about it, they're like, yeah, I hate the sound of a Strat. And I always thought, that's weird, isn't it? Strats went from being so rock and roll when Jimi Hendrix was playing them to now very much being the... It's kind of the dad guitar, isn't it? It's the PRS. It's not a PRS. I'm not, you know, maybe that's the John Mayer-y sort of thing. But yeah, whatever. And anyway, since then, I've discovered, because I've also got a Baja Telecaster, which, of course, I don't need to go on about. Obviously, when I got the Baja Telecaster, podcast listeners, you'll be aware that I was not aware it had a four-way. I really wish it didn't. I really like the sort of three options. The fourth option doesn't sound great anyway. So, you know, you're either on the neck or the bridge. Am I right? On a Telecaster anyway. You're either on the neck or you're on the bridge. You don't need anything else. No need for series and parallel or anything like that. I just stay on the bridge anyway on the telly. I think it sounds absolutely fantastic. And I have to say, having an American original Stratocaster, which is upwards of 1,300 British pounds, and a Baja Telecaster, I don't know what they go for now. Hey, do you remember when we started doing this podcast and they were like 450? Well, now, I don't know, are they 850, 700? I don't know, something like that. I tell you what, since leaving a guitar shop, my knowledge of pricing on guitars is really not very good. Anyway, I'm going to try and continue to go around sort of the guitars in this in this room, but I'm going to have to do that week by week. So in that last section, I was the whole idea of that last section was that I'd talk about guitars that I want to buy. But I think I spent the entire time actually talking about the Strat. So I guess next week I'll have to talk about that, because there are other things that I want to talk about on this the first episode of Bar Chords. So anyway, I have switched over onto the Helix recently. Only at home. I haven't gigs with the Helix yet. I am going to soon. So at the moment, I'm still for live use using a Boss MS3, which I still think is the best option out there if you want to use real pedals. But it's just so much more convenient, because you get the convenience of a sort of multi-effects unit, because it has built-in effects, but then you just get to use a few of your favorites. So I really like the MS3 for that, because I'm really into like the Petty John Petty Drive 2. It's very, very good. I get to use that. I use a top quality compressor and an Origin Effects compressor. I get to use the Petty John Drive. I get to use the Strymon. Oh, I always forget it. Is it the Dig? Strymon Dig? That doesn't feel right. I can't remember. But the Strymon flanger, the tape, you know, warbling thing. I really like that. So I get to have those pedals. Oh, and a 1984 Boss OC2. I mean, that is a really good set of pedals, isn't it? And then the compressor obviously doesn't have to be part of that chain. It can run before, but those other three pedals I can run into the Boss MS3, have them on the separate lines. But then when I want other effects, like I use a lot of vibrato, I can use the inbuilt vibrato. I use ring mod sometimes. I can use the inbuilt ring mod. Occasionally, at the end of a song, I want a big, swirling delay, a big unlatched. A big delay reverb thing, and I can assign that to an unlatched button and just like hit that occasionally. There's no point me having a delay and a reverb for just every now and again when I hit a big thing. So you can use the MS3 for that, and I think it is wonderfully, wonderfully versatile for that. But the thing that I've been getting into recently, the thing about the Helix, which has made me switch, is, well, amp models. Here's the thing. I don't want to use the Helix as an amp replacement. And I think a lot of people still want to use amplifiers, but I'm not sure. See, I can never tell when it's me being an idiot or when it's an actual trend in the industry. But here's my thing. If I didn't own a Helix and didn't know anything about it, I would be like, well, I'm not going to buy a Helix because I have a nice amp. I always want to use my amp. But that's the thing. And I kind of feel like they're marketed, because so much of the marketing is orientated towards metal players, they're really like over the top, sort of like Helix, it's the solution for everything. I mean, I don't want to do that. I still want to bring an amp. So what I'm doing is using the preamp section on the Helix, running into the effects return on my amp head. And so I'm still using the power amp from my amp, and I'm still using my cab. So it's still very much, you know, a lot of us will play smaller shows. You know, I love a DIY punk rock show. And the thing about those is, you know, you're not going to have access to the great PA. And this means I've always got my amp, but I can use the preamps. And the thing is, that's blooming great, because it means I can, I think there's still some question over how good like a cab model sounds, you know, a cab simulator actually sounds, whereas I've still got a real cab. I'm just changing the digital preamp from my amp head to a digital preamp on the Helix, and the choice is wonderful. And the best part is, and this is because I'm going to talk about the Helix each week and something cool that I'm doing on it. The best part is you've got lots of things for bass. You've got all the Ampeg, you know, SVT style presets, which are really great. You've got the old acoustic 360s. And for guitar, you've got, oh my goodness, like there's something from everything. So what I really like is so this is what I do with the guitar amp. I'm going into the effects return on a Boss Katana, and I am on the Helix creating two lines, because I like a little bit of gain, you know, sort of an old like dig in and you get the gain. But what I can do is run two parallel channels that then link up at the end and go out through the Katana, one of them using the preamp from an AC15, and then one of them using the preamp from a Fender Twin. And this means I can have all this gorgeous sparkly clean from the Fender, but with this sort of boxier sounding, less headroom sort of grit from the AC15 when I really dig in. And I'm just like, wow, this is fantastic. It certainly takes some getting, there's a learning curve, but my goodness, how fun is that? And what would be your choice on your amp? Sort of maybe, you know, messing around with what your three EQs, your gain and your output. And sure, you know, I love something to be simple as well, but it is lovely to be able to customize your sound this much, to be able to really deep dive and find something that you are super duper happy with. And I think that's really cool. But yeah, that's kind of my thing, is parallel amps, parallel preamps on the Helix. That's what I've been getting really into this week. Well, that is it for this week's episode of Bar Chords, the first ever episode of Bar Chords. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Do let me know. You can do that on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Or if you're on the Patreon, let us know there. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds. And if you fancy checking out that Les Paul video that we shot on YouTube, then it's youtube.com/guitar nerds or something like that. You can type Guitar Nerds into YouTube in any case, and it'll work. But yes, I'll be back next week for another slice of solo guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Thank you. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.